Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and some elements of science and, well, whatever else might pop in. I thought tonight we would talk about emerging discoveries and esoteric truths. Now, I've covered some elements of this particular subject, actually, when I was on a couple of radio stations over the air a number of years ago. In recent times, I haven't covered this subject that much, but there's been a lot more emerging elements to talk about, and also probably for listeners that weren't listening to the older shows that I've done, this will be virtually a new subject for them. Now, what do I mean by emerging discoveries and esoteric truths? I think I'll start with esoteric truths. Esoteric truths are truths that are hidden from most people. They don't understand, and sometimes they don't even have any knowledge about some of these truths. They include the existence of prehistoric societies that existed before recorded history. They involve elements of things that are in the Old and, in lesser extent, the New Testaments of the Christian faith. They involve the history in Sanskrit of the Vedas and some of the elements of the Hindu faith and also the Buddhist religions, several different kinds. And some of these ancient knowledge and ancient writings have peculiar and particular relevancy to us right now. So it's important to know about it. They include some of the more recent writings, very recent writings, of people who write about the visiting by ancient astronauts from various sources and from various kinds of stories. I don't think they include the idea that there has been all of the activity in UFOlogy that includes people wholesale being abducted and other things like that in recent times. But of course, some people have very strong beliefs in that, so I'm not trying to dispute or argue against what people may think about that. I'm just saying the esoteric truths don't necessarily relate to those happenings. They actually are somewhat contradicted by them. As the show goes on, I think it'll make more sense. And it relates to the discoveries in DNA, particularly, and in other fields of biology, as well as fields of astrophysics, the nature, as they're finding out about the universe, things that I have written. Now, I meant this is not a show trying to pat myself on the back, but most of you know I wrote a book that's a textbook called Life's Hidden Meaning. It was written in 93, published in 99. And with few exceptions, most of the book is related to things before 1995. And so the interesting thing about that is that book talks about things that are now taking place. Other people know about several articles I wrote about the future, probably more than several, maybe half a dozen to a dozen. Those articles and subsequent lectures that I gave go back in time, even before 93, as early as the late 80s. But the most important thing about this is that these esoteric truths all are tying in together, not just the things I've written, but many, many parts of what is called ageless wisdom, which is kind of all of this, all of these writings that I've mentioned and much more. And the context is, well, wow, there's a lot out there. Now, some people might say, well, what about the Masons and then the Freemasons, et cetera? They, if you go back far enough, there were these mystery schools, and they were just one branch of the mystery schools. Some of the stuff they knew were esoteric truths. Now, what about the people who were offshoots and kind of wayward, like the Lou Malnati folk? Well, they were very, very political and had not the best intentions. So they took some of the hidden truths, esoteric truths of people like the Masons, but from other sources as well, from Egyptology, et cetera, and tried to make it more like a global political stance. Although some of the people today, actually, in our present government here in the United States, but they were more, I would say, dark than anything else. And some of these esoteric truths, at times, have been truly kidnapped and brought into these other areas of thought that really either are dark or manipulative. So this is a problem. And then a lot of people say, well, what about Nostradamus, et cetera? The problem with Nostradamus, as I've said for a long time, is that the level of mysticism in his writings is so great that it's truly highly speculative for a person to be able to say, well, this means that or this means something else. And for that reason, I don't refer people much to looking at what he said as being an esoteric truth as much as a possible future. And I think that's really what he was tapped into, with some projections into the future based upon maybe some contact with the astral, which is not very accurate, the astral Akasha. I don't think he had a lot of contact, if any, with the mental Akasha, which is more accurate. But at any rate, if we look at all these different factors and alchemy and how it relates, now alchemy was really more of a philosophy than a science. People don't know that. People who were great scientists were also alchemists, meaning that they applied certain philosophical principles to what they believed in science. And they considered some alchemists were very spiritual, others were not necessarily so. At any rate, so that's what I mean by esoteric truths. Now, what do I mean emerging discoveries? As I stated earlier, we are talking about DNA. We are talking about some of the things that are just on the cusp of us being able to determine. But some of the discoveries that are really interesting have to do with earth sciences, and specifically inner earth geology. And that's something I want to bring up tonight, because it's a fascinating area, meaning that we're for the first time starting to map the inside of the earth. They're doing it through seismology, but with much more advanced methods than have been used in decades past. The newest methods in seismology can literally see almost down to the very core of the Earth, and certainly any place surrounding it, and meaning the mantle, which has radically changed our perception of what Earth is like in some respects. Some of the old theories are being challenged now by this new evidence, and that's what emerging discoveries do. People are actually rediscovering the esoteric truths through modern science, and the modern science is now starting to contradict a great deal, almost a phenomenal amount, of things that were accepted science 10, 20 years ago. I'm going to give you another example so that you can follow what I'm saying. In the field of quantum physics, specifically certain parts of quantum physics, there is a general belief that the universe has within it fundamentally a probability of virtually anything happening. But you see, that's been kind of changed around now. And more people realize that what is meant in quantum physics is that only some things are possible. And within those things, there's a probability, therefore, that they will eventually happen. Yet they now have come to the conclusion, and there were people, if you go back in time, that believed this even in 1920, at the very beginnings of quantum physics, but their voices were not well heard. There were people who believed this, but unfortunately, the part of physics that wanted to believe that anything could happen kind of went out for a long time. Now it's beginning to look as though that is just nonsense, that we don't live in a universe where anything can happen. Only certain things are possible, and those things have, therefore, an eventuality of taking place in some period of time, if they're possible. But if they're not possible, that will never happen. There are early experiments in quantum physics that actually prove this point, and a lot of people kind of forgot about those experiments. At any rate, that's called like the exclusionary principles in quantum physics. But this is all tying in now with what our universe is like in physics. And for a long time, many people have said, well, it all started with the Big Bang, but unfortunately, there was this unusual thing called acceleration, which lasted for a certain period of time. Depending upon what type of physics you apply, it could be anywhere from hours to hundreds of thousands of years. But the point is, this acceleration issue has with it an impossible number of circumstances. And when you start adding up all the impossible circumstances, a la last month, Scientific American had an interesting article on it. The fact is that it just doesn't work. So the acceleration model is no longer appropriate, which means that stuff that I talked about, why gravity is something other than what people think it is, we're not going to find the acceleration model that presently, in the last 20, 25 years, had been accepted almost, is not going to work. Now, there it is. There is an emerging discoveries are starting to find that the esoteric truths that God created the universe and is multidimensional. It has seven major dimensions. Each one has seven minor dimensions to it, so there's actually 49 total, but there's really seven major dimensions. And those dimensions look like 10, 9, 10, or 11, depending upon how you count dimensions, to physicists because, like, there's three dimensions here in the physical world, but there's really only one. And actually, a lot of physicists know that. But at any rate, so these things are starting to come together. So when I'm talking about emerging discoveries, I'm talking about just everything you can imagine is taking place, from geology to different types of, we'll say, archaeology. That's what I mean, archaeology, not paleontology, but archaeology, because we're gradually finding things that are denying our beliefs in the heritage of humanity and supposedly the line of a tree or bush of human development that is purely based only on one type of human being eventually coming out of a series of different subtypes. Of course, this I will cover tonight. All of these issues are so vast. There are so many of them that it's going to be difficult to cover everything in this one show. So maybe we'll have another show on it. I don't know if it'll be next week, but it's so many things to talk about that are just hard for most people to even believe until they go research it and say, oh, wow, that guy isn't crazy. He's actually talking about something they really did discover. And, Okay, so let's go back in time. Let's talk about some of the simplest things that a lot of people either believe in or don't, but in either case, they've heard of it. And let's talk about we are human beings. Well, I've described human beings as having been developed by souls, our souls, working with the souls of animals, are called group souls, so individual souls, trying to develop physical human beings with the help of some animal group souls. And the souls of the humans actually came from other worlds. They didn't just come from no place. They came from other worlds. And they are helped by energy beings, sometimes referred to as angels or solar angels, inner guides. Some people call them the alter egos of souls. It doesn't matter what you want to call them, but they are energy beings, and they're in a kingdom above human. And they're more advanced than even human souls are. So these beings helped out. Some of them came from other worlds. Yeah. Matter of fact, a lot of them came from other worlds. Some from Venus, but Venus isn't a planet in a physical sense, to where they came from. They came from the etheric, astral, mental parts of Venus, not from the physical world we call Venus. As I wrote a very long time ago, Venus is not supportable, it hasn't been for a long, long time, of any kind of physical life. And I wrote that, and I said that before that was a known fact. Okay, so, at any rate, we have human beings being created by souls from other places. We have solar angels that are members of the next kingdom, sometimes referred to as the kingdom of souls, and some of them might even be on that into the kingdom of planets, all part of a thing called the spiritual hierarchy of beings. And then there were human advanced beings who are no longer human, but advanced from humanity into this same spiritual kingdom, who also came from other worlds. And some of them came from the Pleiades, the Great Bear, Sirius. These star systems, when I talk about Sirius, I'm talking about the constellation the stars are part of. I'm not talking about necessarily any specific star, or Sirius is a star, but the constellations of these stars, they came from these places. Most of them are not that far from us, at least not when you're talking about the vast, vast number of almost trillions and trillions and trillions of miles away that the space is composed of. These beings came from places within maybe a few hundred to up to 1,000 light years from Earth, in our part of the galaxy, actually. What about extragalactic beings? Well, not too many of them are ever present here in the galaxy, our galaxy, and they don't deal much with planets. They have more to deal with bigger issues. So, but that's a whole other subject. So these beings came to our world, and they started coming, really, at the beginning of what we call the fourth round. It's the time when four types of energy were focused on to develop life on the planet instead of three. It started about 64 million years ago, and about 65 million years ago, when we know the dinosaurs became extinct, but a lot of other animals did too. That's when there were only three of types of energy that were focused on at any one time. So animals didn't develop as quickly, and they didn't develop as balanced in a balanced way. They're relatively extreme types of animals. And there were no human beings, because human beings have to have at least four energies focused on the planet, on any planet, to develop humans. So they started about 64 million years ago. And they developed a kind of human being, but it had no physical form. It was the most it had was a very minor type of etheric form. It was incomplete in its astral development, incomplete in its mental development. And there were two different kinds of races. One was, the first was around the poles, because there wasn't much disturbing kinds of etheric life forms that existed at those places. And then the second type was around oceans, again, this is an etheric form, so it's hard for us to understand what that really is. But again, there's less dangerous etheric types of creatures around those sources. So these two kinds of life forms, we'll call them the polar, boreal, arboreal, and the oceanic. They were pre-human in a sense, but they're considered the first two types of human races that were non-physical. Doesn't mean much to us because only physical races of humanity had much to do with who we are. But they did develop their mental and astral bodies to some extent and a little bit of their etheric. Finally, though, these beings on a more regular basis visited our world and helped to develop real human beings, but they needed physical forms. And they were on a time schedule to be 10 years earlier than evolution could possibly develop any human beings, and about closer to 20 million years if you count the fact that they needed more advanced human beings about where we are today by this time. And therefore, they had to really, really go into hyperdrive and go much faster in the development of human beings than we could do just through evolution. Now, do the models of evolution support what I'm saying? Yes, without question. If you try to create human beings as we are today, starting from the model when they believe human beings started to evolve, which is all wrong anyway, it would be about five times too slow. Now, that's give or take one or two times, but it's still within a huge amount of vast difference between what is statistically likely or even possible and what occurred. So somehow we're here, therefore we did something other than just evolve. And this has been discovered. This was discovered about 25 years ago mathematically, but now more and more it's being discovered in other ways. Okay, so we developed from a combination of some evolutionary animal forms that were started to be developed 64 million years ago and eventually that were used finally successfully about 16.5 million years ago. Yes, there were some attempts before that, but they failed. And the first humans were actually created by taking the etheric, astral, and mental parts of the first two human races and trying to get those to hook up, join with the etheric body of an animal. That was as advanced as they could make it, these kinds of animals. Some people say, well, were those primates? Well, they could have been any kind of animal, really, but it was an animal most likely similar to what we would call primates. And these animals, though, were bred, so to speak, through a process in which guidance was given to the evolutionary process. So this saved 10 to 20 million years. At least 10. Not without some difficulty, though, because humans immediately became more animalistic for several million years than they would have been had they gone through the normal evolutionary development. So they had to overcome a lot of the nature of animals, which is to not perceive God. And they had to struggle with having a contrary perception to their senses. Their senses told them there was no God, and their physical senses, at least. I should be clear about that. The physical senses, there was no God, but their etheric, astral, mental senses, and particularly their mental senses, were telling them there was a God. And so they were struggling with this, and we still have elements of this inside of us today, because evil was also developed in humanity, which crystallized that animal nature in humanity and made it part of our personality, so the subconscious part of ourselves. And so we struggle with this very thing, even today. Some of us do. Okay, so we saved 10 million years, but not without some consequences. Maybe we saved 12 or 15 million years. But whatever it was, there were consequences were to be paid for, so to speak, in the struggle, the suffering of humanity, because we suffer by the struggle of sensing God with our higher senses, from our heart and heart and crown chakras. Only when they are open, and they open from us creating virtue in our life and doing so in, for the benefit of other life, including other humans. And as we do that, we then are in conflict with our more animal nature, which says, oh, I don't see any God here. I don't smell or taste any God here, so I don't hear any God. So maybe there is no God. We're kind of a confused being. All right. So the beings that came here were trying to help us through this process. Once we started to develop our civilizations, which means we adopted some of the elements of animals, plants, and minerals, and brought them into our own lives and made them part of ourselves, they extended our bodies and senses, too, in the process. That means that's what civilization is doing for us, and that means that we were very intent on doing that. But they tried, these other beings from other worlds, tried to have communication with those of humanity who were the more advanced, the ones who were more clearly seeing God, and because they were very spiritual beings. And they helped us to develop ourselves and to create more virtuous societies with civilizations that used the lower kingdoms in ways that were beneficial to them and to other humans. It was a good thing that they tried to do. They didn't always succeed, and sometimes some of their own experiments went very wrong. But nonetheless, this was some of the esoteric truths that eventually got lost. Now, how did it get lost? Well, partly because all of humanity was overly influenced by evil throughout some parts of prehistory. During the seventh subrace of the Lemurians, humans became very dark. And during that subrace, unfortunately, they developed slaves and slavery. They started to degenerated race, sub-races of earlier Lemurians were oftentimes enslaved, and others were enslaved of the same race, the seventh sub-race, that were fought in battles and wars against. And they tried to enslave anybody and everything they could for the benefit of having free labor and the right to abuse humans at will. Unfortunately, this brought in really the first really strong element of evil into humanity. And that strong element was like a seed. It then waited for the seventh race of Atlanteans, many millions of years later, to become really bad. But in the fifth, sixth, and seventh Atlanteans, evil was growing. So we can't just say it went from the seventh to the seventh. It also went from the seventh to the fifth and then to the sixth, and finally it went crazy in the seventh. By the seventh Atlantean race, seventh sub-race of Atlanteans, about one out of four people were just evil. That's a huge number, 25%. Just imagine if every fourth person you met was an evil dude. Wow. And usually they're male, so I can use the word dude. And so this is a terrible thing. And because of this much evil spread throughout the world, there was a necessity to literally destroy most of civilization because it had become contaminated from this evil to be nothing but a super dark kind of societies. And once you choose to get rid of evil, you also choose to get rid of pre-knowledge or prior knowledge. And that's the reason we don't know about this stuff. We're first finding out about it now, but here again, evil is getting stronger in the world. So there's like a race going on between the esoteric truths becoming truly by the majority of people rediscovered versus evil taking over the planet and destroying all of us. It's a serious problem. Okay, so this was one of the biggie events, and it happened in stages during the 5th, 6th, and 7th sub-races of the Atlantean race. And unfortunately, there was a progression of destruction so that the world itself changed in a physical sense. The Atlantean continent disappeared, as the Lemurian continent disappeared before the Atlantean. They actually fell below the sea level, before the sea, into the crust of the earth, and then further into the mantle of the earth. Part of the continents went into the mantle of the earth. You could say, oh, come on, that just sounds ridiculous. Yeah, I know it sounds ridiculous. It's in the last 2 years, with the new seismology, the remnants of these continents have been discovered in the mantle of the earth, exactly where they're supposed to be. One in the southern Pacific, below that region, inside the mantle of the earth. They're calling them now submerged continents in the mantle. And then the one of Atlantis, which went down 10 million years later, really, that continent, at least, we'll say between 5 and 10 million years later in totality, that continent also submerged below the Atlantic Ocean and through the Atlantic Ridge, where it originally emerged from. It went back down. And not only did it go into the mantle, but it started to slid under Africa in the mantle. Because Africa, all the continents float on top of the mantle. They're not submerged in the mantle. And this is so dense, because it was made out of balsamic rock, that it actually went deeper into the mantle. And by the way, I wrote about this. In 1993, taught it before then, and I said because it was made out of balsamic, it would do this, and that's what it did. They found both of the submerged continents in the last 2 years or so, and not just through one experiment, but through numerous ones. You can look it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you say that's pretty important emerging discoveries now that everybody said, well, if Atlantis existed as a continent, if Lemuria existed as a continent, where are the continents? Now we know where they are. But it goes deeper. It goes to this point. Let me bring in a few more interesting ideas. I don't even know where to start for this, just so much. Well, let's talk about the submerging. When the remainder of the Atlantean continent submerged, there were gigantic changes in ocean levels, gigantic changes in ice ages from one point to another, depending upon when what submergence we're talking about. The last one ended the ice age, which raised ocean levels hundreds of feet. And you might say, so what? Well, there happens to be several hundred cities submerged 100 to 300, 400, 500 feet below sea level. Yeah. Submerged. And they are starting to date these, the material, the stone, etc., in these cities. And they're finding that they are pre-submerged Atlantean periods. In other words, pre-10,000 or more years ago. Right? Some of them go back 50 to 100,000 years ago. Well, if Atlanteans didn't exist, who built these cities, the hundreds of them, that are now submerged below the seats? You might want to ask yourself that question if you haven't already, if you know about this stuff. So, is that an emerging discovery? When did he discover these cities? In the last decade. In the last decade. Many people thought they were only a couple thousand years old, but it wouldn't fit the end of the Ice Age problem. And now, they've done carbon dating and other methods to discover that they're tens of thousands of years. Well, I guess that's an emerging discovery. And there you can see it tying to the esoteric truth. Okay, so what about that? That's just like mind-boggling, isn't it? I mean, and the thing is that because these cities have not been thoroughly explored, they've been discovered but not thoroughly explored, there's a whole heck of a lot that's going to be uncovered the next two decades. You can imagine what this is going to lead to. We're going to have to rewrite virtually everything. all the science books are going to have to be rewritten. No matter which science you're choosing to look into, they're all going to have to be changed. But certainly, paleontology, archaeology, going to have to make some huge changes there. Some of you probably have heard of this, that there are pictures of light bulbs showing how the Egyptians built the pyramids inside some of the most cherished and secretive knowledge pyramids. There are pictures of light bulbs showing them building the pyramids and also inside the pyramid, not the outside, and painting on the walls, putting in hieroglyphics, etc. There's no sign they ever used any fire, and mirrors don't get in more than a couple hundred yards. You can't make more than two or three turns before the light's gone. And so it wouldn't work. There's no way to get light in there unless you get a lot of fireflies. But they have a heck of a lot of them. And they found the batteries that also light the light bulbs. Now, you could believe the batteries were used for other things, but my bet's on the light bulbs myself, especially since the design of the light bulbs is consistent with modern science in terms of making a useful light bulb. These would actually have worked. Now, they may not have lasted 20,000 hours or something. They may have only lasted 1,000 hours. But the thing is that some of them look like they may have been based upon ionized gas, which we call fluorescence, rather than the more quote-unquote common in the past light bulbs that were first developed by us. So they may have more advanced light bulbs than we had up to just a couple decades ago, a few decades ago. So, I mean, this is amazing stuff. Amazing. Yes, we've had neon lights for longer than that, but not in common usage. And fluorescent lights haven't been common since after World War II. So really, this is pretty big stuff. You might ask yourself, well, what does all that mean? Well, we'll talk more about it when we come back, which will be in about 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about emerging discoveries and esoteric truths. And there are so many things to talk about tonight that I'm going to only touch on some things, because the fact is there's way too much, way too many emerging discoveries happening now. And I'm not even, by the end of the show, we'll talk about some things that haven't yet happened that I predict will. So this is going to be kind of like a little far out for some people, but again, so far, and for the next half an hour or so, I'm going to be talking about only things that have actually been discovered already, at least. So you can find these. You can find the research about these things. Okay? So let me continue on. Again, I'm going to jump around because I don't want to stay in just one area, because people have different interests and different things and different knowledge bases. I want to touch on a lot of different areas that some people might have some prior knowledge about, which will make it more exciting for them. Okay, so at any rate, let's talk about how races using esoteric truths are actually developed, and how what we think of as prehistoric peoples are humans, homo something or others, are actually, in many cases, not everyone, degenerated races of earlier Atlanteans and Lemurians. Yeah, that's true. I'll go back in time, just so you can catch up, so to speak. Now let's talk about the remaining Lemurians. Well, the Lemurians, the race that survived the longest of the Lemurians, the two of them actually, were the sixth sub-race and the seventh. The seventh remained kind of violent and dark, and the sixth remained kind of very isolated. And some of them ended up mostly in very, very isolated places, in the islands, etc. Both were in those kinds of remote regions. The seventh, but there were some sixth as well, ended up in places like New Guinea. And until recently, people that lived there were actually degenerated sub-races of the Lemurians. Not anymore. Within a generation, they can change into fifth sub-race peoples. This is hard for us to understand, but it's the truth. And again, I've written about this a long, long time ago. How does it take place? What causes this sort of thing? Well, why do they degenerate in the first place? It's because of this thing with the rays. You see, once the rays change in focus, the sub-race that was being developed now suffers, unless it was created itself into light and virtue. very virtuous subrace, and the six subraces of Lemurians are pretty virtuous, they can survive longer, and they may not degenerate as quickly. Whereas a seventh subrace, Lemurian, could turn into cannibals who are extremely violent and who don't have, we'll say, a clear sense of God. When you don't have a clear sense of God, cannibalism makes sense because humans are just another animal form to you, and you eat them the way you eat an animal. The reason the sixth subrace didn't eat humans is the same reason that they were, the majority of them were vegetarians. They didn't even eat animals for the most part. So their sense of God was strong enough to carry them through even to almost modern times, like we're starting talking about before World War II. And up to that time, they lived in very isolated communities. And we don't know all the places they were living, but they were living in places around what we'll call the South Pacific, and, towards the closer to the equator, though, like around New Guinea, etc. And they also became the Aborigines in Australia. Now, this is going to surprise you because a lot of people think that the Aborigines came from Africa and were just an offspring of the people who migrated from Africa. And that's not true. Aborigines actually have a crossing of genes in modern day that will include, some of them will include, some of the genes from the African people that they are supposed to have come from. But in reality, they are much, much older. They go back millions of years. And their own belief structure, their own, we'll say, religion tells them so. One of the things that is clear about them, the six remnants of the six subraces, that even though they did degenerate eventually to some extent, they still maintain some of their etheric sense, heightened etheric sense, and when they do the walkabout, etc., they are able to sense things at a distance using etheric sight, etheric hearing. And again, if you want to know more about that, you can read some of the material I've written about that. But at any rate, so here we have some interesting information about the Aborigines. This has not yet been discovered. It will be further discovered as new DNA checks are made on these folks. They already have some of the anomalies showing up. The biggest anomalies, though, are coming from very strange discoveries. They just discovered that Homo heidelbergensi, which is a type of human that lived around 550,000 years ago, give or take, and lived possibly as late as 250,000 years ago. And they were big people, big boned. They were degenerated, though, from the fifth Atlantean subrace folks. And I talked about them, many years ago on the radio, before that. Other article lectures. The thing that's important to know about them is that they were around as late as the end of Atlantis. Now, you might say, how could that be? Well, the seventh subrace Atlanteans enslaved people, as did starting from the fifth subrace. The very end of the fifth subrace to the sixth subrace, they started to enslave people when they had wars with each other. The darker ones became evil. And the sixth subrace people lived like 400,000 to 200,000 years ago when the Heidelbergensis were around. And they captured them and enslaved them. I wrote about this again. And when they enslaved them, these people also degenerated, partly because they were enslaved. Because when human beings are removed from being free beings, they degenerate just from that process alone. It's difficult because they lose sight of God. At any rate, then the seventh subrace in Atlanteans continued the process of enslaving these same Heidelbergensi descendants, so that when Atlantis went down, the Heidelbergensi people were found in a few of the colonies of Atlantis in Southeast Asia. Unbelievable, because Heidelbergensi was from parts of Europe, northern Europe, when it was warmer, during the intermen aspects of the different the ice ages, and they were like living where we would think Germany and Austria are. But to find them in Southeast Asia doesn't make any sense at all, unless you understand that they were slaves by that point. And again, they were found to be 12,000 years ago. That's right before Atlantis was destroyed. And they know for sure through their DNA that these are real Heidelbergensi people. But they can't figure out how they could be from 12,000 years ago when the last ones that there's any sign of them possibly having lived was over 250,000 years ago. So you can see how this all takes place. You can start seeing. I'm explaining to you how this emerging discoveries are going to confirm esoteric truths. And there's just so much of this. It's like mind-boggling to even talk about, because it's just one every other day. There's something new. I'm not exaggerating this. Okay, so let's talk about some other area of science now. Okay, there is an area in a province in India that there's a city, and this was on Ancient Astronauts, if anybody's watched that program on TV. That's where I heard about it. And this city was supposed to have been destroyed a long time ago by some kind of ancient visitors from other worlds who had spaceships. And they had a battle, supposedly, with others that were coming here to do no good. But these were our protectors. The ones that were good were our protectors. There were some other ancient peoples from other worlds who had come by, which we'll talk more about in a few minutes, but who were in a battle. But supposedly some kind of incredible weapon was used on this poor city. Well, they started to excavate the city in the last decade. And what they discovered was glass that had been fused from sand and other elements, silica. And the result is that temperatures reaching over a million degrees, in some cases, were discovered, at least in hundreds of thousands, which can only come from the sun or a nuclear blast. Then they just decided, well, if they could find this glass, which is rare, now, it could have come from a strike by a certain type of medium. It's possible to produce the glass. But the problem is that these kinds of meteors do not contain the type of radioactive isotopes that you make a nuclear bomb of. Those are mostly actually made by us. People say, well, could it be uranium or, you know, radium or... Yeah, those elements could produce radioactivity, but that's not what investigation found in this city. They went ahead and checked it, and they found two types of radioactive isotopes that can only be produced artificially and are only used, or not used, but only are a byproduct of like a plutonium type of bomb explosion. Well, there just aren't any meteors that are causing that kind of destruction made out of plutonium. So one has to conclude that a nuclear device was used on the city. Now, the other estimate was that the city was sometime developed or destroyed, about 1000 BC. Problem is that they can now date with going to these radioactive isotopes better, the city's destruction, and it was maybe 6,000 or 7,000 or more years before that. Well, there's a problem, you see, because there weren't any people building cities, much less nuclear bombs, atomic weapons, to use on them around 5,000 or 6,000 BC. Okay. Now, what's really happening? What is the truth? Well, the truth is that right around that time, right before, the decision was made by our spiritual hierarchy on this world, along with, in conjunction with several others from other star systems, from other constellations, to get rid of the Atlantean civilization and put us back in time along that, like a million years. When that decision was made, it allowed the opportunity for a short period of time for evil planets to intervene because there was a direct intervention by these advanced beings who take care of our planet. But when they directly intervene, like they did, it allows other planets the karmic ability to come in and intervene. Now, I've talked about this in recent months on this show, but at any rate, so here we have this opportunity, and it happened a couple times that I'm aware of, right before Atlantis was fully destroyed, and then right after. And the right after would coincide, when I say right after, soon after, would coincide with this city in the province in India. And there's other indications throughout the world of some struggles taking place. And again, it was during that specific time. These are rare events, because usually there isn't so much intervention. But things are going so badly, there was actually a need to intervene. Now, the show that I brought this up in was what might happen in the next 10 or 20 years, 50 years, if things go bad in the world we're in right now. And we could have exactly the same kind of occurrence, where because there's a destruction of a society or intervention of some sort to prevent evil from spreading, there could be evil sent here, brought here by that, to kind of balance the equation, you might say, in a karmic sense. So we could have, for the first time in thousands and thousands of years, evil visitors to our planet. Let's hope that we don't get to that level, because I don't think the world's going to be too nice if it does. Okay, so this is a fascinating story. I mean, this is another emerging discovery. They have not finished the work that I'm telling you about. But what they've discovered so far is just like, again, it's like, holy cow, how could that happen? It's just pretty amazing stuff. Now you could say, well, okay, could it be a one in a million chance it was an asteroid that came in and did this? No, not exactly. Even that wouldn't work. Even if you go to maybe there was a plutonium asteroid produces, but you see, there's another problem, that asteroids either create a blast pattern, like 10,000, 20,000 feet in the atmosphere, that travels out for a very long way, way bigger than a blast site from a small nuclear device, or they have an impact, like a big crater. Neither exists. Instead, the impact site is that of a bomb about twice the size of the Hiroshima bomb, a true atomic bomb. It has a totally different signature of a blast. So no asteroid that we know of would produce that kind of effect, whether it blows up in the upper atmosphere or blows up hitting the ground. Neither way would apply. It just doesn't fit the evidence. I know, we can try to debunk it some other way, come up with some other, you know, far-out belief structure. But remember, you reach odds. What are the odds? And you have to say, how probable is that compared to what I'm trying to explain? Okay, let's jump to another place, another city. There are several cities and places in the Andes. This is on the other side of the world. That have, in South America, that clearly show that advanced types of architecture were developed, including the moving of blocks of stone 10,000 feet up a mountain or more, if it could even be done. And then within fractions of a centimeter, like a millimeter or two, matching these blocks and making them couple together, thousands of them, to build structures. Well, who in the heck had any ability to do that? Because we would be hard-pressed to do that today. So how is this happening? Well, let me tell you the esoteric truth. The esoteric truth is that to help humanity after the Atlantean civilization was destroyed, to help humanity rebuild in some areas of the earth, and to keep humanity in C groups alive, it was necessary to build cities for humans. And with them, by advanced peoples, beings, they weren't necessarily fully human beings, they were superhuman beings, using technologies that we are barely understanding today. Some of these technologies involve the use of sound with light lasers. Sound with light lasers. Oh, I'm getting into the future. Yeah, I know. I'm just starting to build on it. Yeah. What is a sound with a light laser? Anyway. Well, if you couple sound and light together in sympathetic frequencies, it's possible to build a kind of, we'll say, chiseling tool. Beyond that, a very destructive weapon if you really are sinister, but a chiseling tool that could, without melting rock completely, smooth it to incredible levels and to cut it to incredible levels. Could also, if you wanted to vary the frequencies between the two, sound and light, actually melt rock. I'm talking to incredibly hot levels. And both, there are signs of both of these things that I just said in some of these cities. That's right. So you say, well, when you talk about Machu Picchu, they're surrounding areas, not necessarily in that specific location. But so here, this is beyond, comprehension, because now they've also dated these cities for the first time. And the dates on them are only 10,000 years ago. Who was building cities 10,000 years ago that were so advanced? And some of them go back before the last fall of Atlantis to 20 and 30 and 40 and 50,000 years ago, using some similar sciences of advanced tools, advanced designs. Well, who would have 50,000 years ago on Earth had lasers or whatever they use? I mean, come on. If you believe in the science, at least up to this minute, that is pretty much accepted and taught in school about archaeology and paleontology, there were no intelligent beings doing anything on Earth of that nature. Okay, let's go on. There are a lot of pictures, as you know, drawings, pictures, sculptures, of these ancient aliens who were actually super beings. Some of them from other worlds, some of them from our world. The ones from our world didn't have to wear any apparatus or use anything because they actually live in the realms of higher dimensions, time and space, on our physical world. But if you come from another star system, you may have a constitution that you have to modify to some extent. And also, you have to travel intradimensionally. You can't travel through the etheric physical dimension because the speed of light would be your maximum speed. Even if you could travel at the speed of etheric light, which is, oh, give or take, maybe twice the speed of what we think light can move at, it wouldn't matter. It really won't change anything. If you're coming 1,000 light years, you're not going to spend 1,000 years to get here, or even 500. But if you go through the higher mental world, you can get here in a day or two. And that may surprise you. You might say, whoa, a day or two? Well, if you're 100 light years away. If you're 1,000 light years away, it might take you a half a year, 6 months ago. But still, you know, that's doable. And most of the folks that did come here, the mean would probably be a few hundred light years. So we're not talking that much time, really. I mean, someone who came from Sirius is only 4.5, the star itself, in the whole surrounding constellation, it's only 4.5 to maybe 6 or 7 light years away. Wow. That's a day. That's like probably less than a day. Yeah, I mean, so it's not going to take you much time to go from one place to another. But here's the glitch. When you get here, you're in mental plane energy. You have to reconstruct the form. It's a thing called white magic. You have to reconstruct the form into astral and then into physical form for you to have a body and a form here. And you can't take the body with you through those dimensions. So you have to reconstruct. It's not impossible to do. As a matter of fact, it's more than just possible. The physics of it are almost known today. We're within 10 years, maybe, of figuring that out as we start figuring out dimensional issues. Let me tell you more about that. I know some people are going to be interested in that. The physics of that. We're eventually going to discover that there is asymmetry between dimensional issues. So people who are symmetrical believers in string theory are not going to like that. But that's just too bad because there is asymmetry. The reason is that the quantum constant changes and gravity changes. Now, you don't have to know what I'm talking about right now, but the important thing to realize is that when we start changing dimensions, physics changes, okay? The physics changes. And you can't apply the same laws in the same way. You can sort of extrapolate the laws, but you have to change them around because the formula for gravity changes, and gravity is a major part of the formula for a thing called the quantum constant, which is otherwise known as Planck's constant. And Planck was a genius mathematician of the turn of the century who came across this thing that everything in our neck of the woods has a certain degree of uncertainty. But it's extremely, extremely small and only affects very small things until you move to the next dimension. When you get to the astral dimension, this constant jumps to a much larger dimension. And when you get to the mental dimension, it's huge, huge. As you increase the quantum constant, you increase the dilation of time. And the speed of light becomes immensely greater, a lot of times. Hundreds and eventually thousands. That's greater. So So that's an unfortunate thing when that happens. But it's a fortunate thing because it allows people to travel through the astral or mental dimensions and to go from one constellation to another and to travel at immense distances in relatively reasonable periods of time. Nonetheless, how then do you convert back? And you get back to the physical world if you want to visit the physical part of our world, and you come from the Pleiades, a few hundred light years. Well, you get here, and you're going to say to yourself, well, okay, I want to be in physical form because that's where the humans are that I'm most interested in seeing how they're doing and maybe do something to be of some service. In order to change your pattern of energy, you have to reduce the frequency and change the direction of the energy, and you have to decrease the dimensionality. As you do that, you're creating physical energy. First, you have to create astral, and then you create physical energy. And that's the process. Now, can I tell you more about how to do that? Yes, I could, but I'm not allowed to. In the next 10 to 20 years, as we get disillusioned through frustration with our accelerators that are presently they're searching for certain theories in physics, some of those theories are going to fall apart. But then they're going to jump to the next idea, which is going to be that maybe there really are alternate dimensions that are asymmetrical to physics and that have a change in the quantum constant, the speed of light, and gravity changes. And that will then open the eyes of people. I don't think it's going to be much more than 20 years, seriously, because we are right on the emerging discovery as I speak. The next few years, they're going to start coming up with these contradictory discoveries that will lead them in the right direction. Them being particle physicists and some other kinds of physicists will be doing this. String theorists will, too. Okay, so the cool thing about this is that there is an explanation for how these people actually got here, because one of the problems that many scientists have, and I don't blame them for this, is they say, well, okay, you say people are coming from up to 1,000 light years or more away from us. How are they living long enough to get here? And how are they doing it? Because really, as you even come close to a quarter of the speed of light, the mass of an object starts to increase at enormous rates. And the amount of energy to move you any faster becomes almost infinitely impossible. Well, you just get around that by changing your dimension and you're fine. But, yeah, if you believe in the physics of today, it doesn't seem possible. Okay. Oh, there's so much to talk about, I know. And I'm reaching that point, I'm watching the clock, and I'm saying, oh, I'm going to tell them so much more about this or that. Okay, let's move on to another area. That's of interest to some people. Again, not everyone is going to love every subject I bring up because there's just so much. But let's talk about another area. Neanderthals. Neanderthal is a kind of being who has intrigued people for well over 120 years, and we're still trying to figure out what the heck this thing is, right? I mean, since the very earliest discoveries, when we really had no idea, we thought they were just kind of ape people, you know, sort of. Then gradually in the earlier part of the last century, they became like the old conception of the caveman kind of thing. But the Neanderthals were not really that at all. What were they? They're the degenerated sixth Atlantean subrace. And they emerged towards the end of the, towards the middle of the sixth Atlantean subrace. They emerged about 350,000 years ago or so. They were the least spiritual in the beginning of the process, and they degenerated more rapidly. The sixth subrace was pretty unspiritual, if went off into areas where others wouldn't follow. Some of these were the more isolated areas of Europe. And then the Ice Ages came and kind of isolated them further. They continued to degenerate into smaller beings than the people than they were originally. That also helped them deal with the cold, which is actually an adaptation to cold. And some people think they came from Heidelbergensi people, and in a way they did, because the sixth subrace came out of the fifth subrace of but they didn't come directly out of it. So when they do comparisons today, they have discovered that, sure enough, the theory was that Neanderthals came from Heidelbergensis, and now they find that that's genetically just not working out in their DNA. There's just too many things that aren't quite fitting. Some things look right, other things don't. So DNA is doing a really good job. It's just that most people don't know about this yet. It's not reaching the general population. It's still being kicked around and almost held secret and hostage by scientists who aren't liking the fact that their theories are getting blown out of the water. Science tends to be relatively egotistical. It has to do with the fifth ray being so strongly represented by science, and we're the fifth subrace of the fifth race of people, and so we tend to be very egotistical. It just tends to be our nature. And unfortunately, only humility is the real solution for it, but not that many people are practicing that these days. Spiritually disciplined people, yes, they're trying to. They really are. So, at any rate, let me further expound on this issue. What's going to be the outcome? Well, the outcome is going to be that eventually, some of the stuff I'm writing maybe, but most likely not from what I've written, eventually they're going to say, you know, it doesn't add up. You have all these different human minds that somehow share some kind of genetic structure similar to each other, but it doesn't look like they can maybe even mate together. And the other problem that we're having is that some are more advanced than the other ones before them in terms of DNA. So nothing is making any sense to anyone who is trying to figure this thing out. Let me give you an example about this thing about being more advanced. Okay. It's looking like Neanderthals might have been more advanced than some of the earliest fifth race people were, because they came from seed groups of the first subrace of the fifth race of people. You might say, well, why wouldn't the fifth race be more advanced than the sixth subrace of the fourth race? And there's a good reason for it. The fifth race people aren't necessarily going to develop a full civilization, and they're going to be limited in a number of ways because the rays are way out of kilter for them. Seed groups of people are developed when rays are not in focus for their benefit. And so they can actually have some great anomalous DNA issues in comparison, and even brain development and other issues in comparison to earlier subraces, even those that may have de-evolved, literally, such as the Neanderthals. Let me give you an example. The Neanderthals have a capacity, brain capacity, averaging about 1,625 cc's. But the humans that lived around, okay, those humans had about a 1,475 to 1,500 cc brain, and we have about a 1,525 to 1,550 cc brain, still smaller than the Neanderthals. Now, is that weird? Because the whole concept of brain development is one of the main pillars of evolution. that humans are evolved because we have these bigger brains and all sorts of stuff. That we have smaller brains than the Neanderthals. What happened? Well, the Neanderthals, these guys were degenerated, remember, from the sixth subrace. But most of their brain was used for creative imagination rather than monastic or mental thinking. And we gave up a lot of that imagination in order to survive the debacle of the destruction of Atlantis. Why did we give it up? Because it was the creative imagination that was holding us hostage to a thing called the kama, meaning astral or emotional, and monastic, mental kind of thinking. And that's accentuated by people who, unfortunately, think more creatively, imaginatively than mentally, such as the Neanderthals. About two-thirds of their brain, or more, was being used for creative imagination. About 20% of our brains today are being used for creative imagination. To try to control this urge to think emotionally first instead of mentally. We still do it, and we're born that way, and we have to change it. Some people claim it's up to 40%, by the way, but it's still nowhere near 20 to 40, whatever it is, as far as the creative imagination part of the brain. It's nowhere near what the Neanderthals were. The Neanderthals were up around 70%. So they imagine things like Atlanteans did, and they have very strong imagination. Where, and especially the earlier ones, had more strong imagination than the later ones did, showing the de-evolution. Whereas our forefathers that came from C groups, from the first, second, and up to the third C group of the fifth race, and this is a C group of the first, second, and third races, these C groups were thousands and thousands of years earlier than the races were ever created, and long before the rays were right for developing them. Now, I realize some of this is getting people lost because this is an area you're really fascinated by, you know enough about, you may not be able to follow this very easily. But the bottom line is that the seed groups that we think were our earlier race of modern humans, they call them, had a lot of deficiencies and a lot of problems. And they didn't have a good balance between their creative imagination and between their mental thinking. They were still actually confused at times between the two, more than the Neanderthals were. So the Neanderthals were very successful. I mean, we've only been around in modern terms for no more than 100 to 120,000 years. Those 100 people from that period of time were the earliest seed group of the very first subraid group of monastic people. And those people were unsuccessful. They didn't live very long. They died out. And it was like 120,000. They tried to get 100,000. They got about 85,000, and finally, right around 70,000, there was some success. But the point is that these early C groups only confuse us because they don't represent truly modern humans. And that has confused everything. Now, is all of this going to come out eventually? I believe so. But it's going to take a lot of unraveling to figure out who is doing what when. All you have to do is listen to someone reporting stuff about modern humans, and they're so screwed up and confused. They say one thing about this period, another thing about that period, and they can't quite get any of it correct. They really can't. But the Neanderthals were as degenerated sub-race Atlanteans, lived for 325,000 years. That's way longer than we've been. So you can see that we have to start changing our perspective on who comes from what and when. It's going to take some time. Most humans, they claim, that are modern were killed off from volcanic activity, give or take about 75,000 years ago, probably closer to 73 or 4,000. But when it happened, it wasn't just from that alone that humans were limited. It was because there still was not a true successful sea group, even though many have been tried as first sub-race sea groups. Most of them were not very successful because imbalances in the brain itself and other anatomical problems. Truly problematic. Now, how did all this get worked out then? Well, we've got to go back to the people that came here, from the superhumans that came here from other worlds and part of this world too. They actually manipulated some of our DNA. They changed human beings. And I wrote about this. I said that they did it in isolation. They took isolated groups, and they actually changed these groups. The ways that they did, I can't talk about completely. But they used certainly methods that we would consider to be like sort of hybriding. Isolation is part of hybriding, right? Inbreeding or interbreeding. But other things were employed, more advanced things than that. There are ways to change genes in people that truly could be done at the much below the cellular level, much below even the DNA level, getting right down literally to altering what we would call molecules of DNA. And directly changing them throughout a person's body in a gradual sense. You can't do it too quickly. And you could make someone into a new kind of person. Or you could just do this with their offspring and leave that person alone. Or you could do it both. But the ways to do this, I don't want to mention at this point. I'll say this, it has to do a lot with the Leo changes. You're going to have to know a lot about biology, understand what I'm saying. But you have to change things that way, and you may have to introduce things that are completely foreign to a being to make the kind of changes that I'm referring to. But it was possible for more advanced beings than humans of the time, of course, to do this. Now you could say, well, what were the Atlanteans doing when all these sea groups were being experimented with, and they were having wars, they were trying to kill some of the sea groups, and then they were enslaving the rest of them. So it got very confused. The whole thing truly turned into a great confusion. Unfortunate, because today it has made a nightmare for anybody to try to figure out the lineage of humanity, especially if you're using only an evolutionary model. It won't work. This is not going to work. All right. So, what other emerging discoveries are going to happen? Well, the technologies of our paleontological ancestors are way more advanced than anything we know of today about them. Not more advanced than our present-day technologies are in general. But they definitely had some amazing technologies. On Atlantis, they had the ability to use what is known as crystal technology, which really isn't so much crystal as it is using the different vibratory frequencies of crystals, much as we use transistors and ICs today. On a micro level, they were able to use different types of crystal forms to produce changes in both etheric and astral energies. That's pretty amazing stuff. They were also able to somewhat affect gravity in this process. And he had ways of lifting objects so that they could fly, literally. And they had to have some ways of doing this, because the proof is in the fact that these stones that are found all throughout the world were moved by something other than anything a human being could have done with the known technology that we believe they had. The technologies I'm talking about is changing the vibrations of objects through the vibrations of these quote-unquote crystal devices that alter gravity. And in fact, internally, the quantum constant of solid objects, producing etheric and astral effects in time and space within the object, because technically the etheric astral fields actually do interpenetrate the dense physical. We just don't notice it because the dense physical is a dampening field that significantly squelches their effects. But if you increase by significant amounts the etheric and the astral vibration and phase differences and the dimensional issues as well, you can actually change a physical object to be partly astral and etheric, and it can float. It could become weightless because you change the quantum constant in the object. For those of you who are into quantum physics, this may make more sense to you than not. For the rest of the world, it sounds crazy, but it may make some sense to some people who are not completely rigid in their thinking about quantum physics. Okay, so that's the technology that was used, and where did it come from? It came from the super beings. They taught it. They taught it to our vastly long time ago ancestors who used the technology without fully understanding it. They didn't just knew how to create it. That technology created disastrous results later on, because sometimes knowledge without spiritual development and consciousness in particular is very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. Now, will this technology reemerge? Yes. Let's talk about a little bit about the future. Within the next 50 to 100 years, it will be rediscovered. But it won't be rediscovered until the dimensions are rediscovered. This is the odd thing. Before it was discovered and led to the discovery of the dimensions, that's during the Atlantean time, now it's going to be reversed, which is much safer, by the way. It will be more likely, very likely, discovered once the dimensionality is worked out. Some of the stuff I've written about and others have reemerged maybe 50 years from now or sometime. And people start saying, hey, there's really all these dimensions, and we got that figured out now. I'm not just talking about a discovery there may be other dimensions. I'm talking about usable knowledge, which takes, if it's going to take 20 years to figure out there are other dimensions that you're actually going to live in, etc., it's going to take at least another 20 or 30 years to make that usable knowledge, and then use that knowledge to create devices that exploit it in a civilization sense. So yeah, we'll be back to Atlantean times when the fifth sub-race of Atlanteans devised these things that allowed them to have heavy, not light, like light airplanes, but heavy ships that could fly about, because they could change the gravitational effect on the ships and vice versa by affecting things like the quantum constant. All interdimensional issues and intradimensional issues. So that's coming. And we should see that the beginnings of it maybe 20 years from now in terms of theory. Practically, I wouldn't count it about it until after the middle of the century. But who knows? It really has a lot to do with how virtuous we are as people and how we grow light in ourselves and in others. If we grow the light, by being virtuous, then these things may come about sooner than later, which would be good. They may not come about at all if we really turn dark, because then we'll destroy ourselves or be destroyed. Either way, it's sort of self-destructive. And then that these things that I'm going to be talking about may not happen, because may not have a planet to be doing anything on. It would do bad things. If evil continues to grow, it's a serious issue. What other sort of things can we look for towards for our future in terms of new discoveries that are really different? Well, obviously, the crystal stuff is going to be a big one. But the next thing we're going to be able to do is to learn how to control our planet. Now, I know that this is hard for us to understand, because when we talk about earthquakes and hurricanes and tsunamis and you name it, we feel victimized and so much out of control. It's as though we look at our world and we say, this is a dangerous place, but we don't recognize that it's really an outgrowth of our own lower consciousness and selfishness that is causing these things to take place in the physical world. They don't really happen in the astral, in the mental especially. They happen here. Now, how can this change? Well, just as we're going to start learning about extra-dimensional issues and applying the sciences to them, we will be able to start dealing more with etheric or electromagnetic energies in ways that are more, I would say, that way we should have done it 100 years ago, but lost the opportunity. Truly, that's the case. We were close at the turn of the last century to starting to move in a more positive direction of electromagnetic energies and understand how to use them in ways that's beneficial. You know, unfortunately, we just screwed up. We turned them almost exclusively into models of war. We are not that far from understanding the four etheric subplanes, but you have to know about each one of those four and how electromagnetic energies traverse those four subplanes and how to use electromagnetic energies to disperse storms, change and control weather. And then the next step is to control the currents inside of the planet, mostly in the top surface of the mantle. Those currents, at this point, we need to learn how to control. And in order to control them, we have to understand both the Earth's electromagnetic field, which we don't understand how it's created. And once we learn about that, we'll learn how to control the currents in the mantle. And by changing the currents in the mantle, we will be able to relocate and change some of the severity of earthquakes and tsunamis. We'll also be able to change waves in the ocean and break apart rogue waves and change the way waves are sometimes being created in a very dangerous fashion, mostly from wind and weather effects, but sometimes from earthquakes as well, combined. So all of that is coming, and as far as emerging discoveries and as far as esoteric truths, it will come because we will realize that what we call the electromagnetic plane is really surrounding all things, and the electromagnetic plane surrounding living things is different than the electromagnetic plane surrounding non-living things. And that's going to change a lot of our understanding of how to deal with non-living and living anomalies that we have problems with. As we resolve those problems, we will also learn how to communicate with people after they've died and they're in the etheric realm. That's going to change almost everything we know about life after death, of course. We eventually will be able to, after the middle of the century, communicate with people in the astral world the way the Atlanteans did using crystal technology. But before that, we'll be able to communicate with people right after they die, and they remain in the etheric world. And we'll be able to communicate with people who are ghosts and get them to move on to the astral world, which will be helpful for them. We'll be able to do a lot of things that right now we don't have any understanding about, all because we don't have even the most basic factors in understanding electromagnetic energy. One of the things we fail to understand is electromagnetic energy is very phase-sensitive, and we only think of it in terms of frequency. Frequency gives us the band from gamma radiation down to, you know, infrared. But the problem is it doesn't tell us anything about the first, second, third, and fourth subplanes of the etheric realm, which you have to learn about and understand because of their differences in phase. The phase difference allows us to then communicate with the people and to move in and out of phase and in and out of these etheric realms. We could go visit somebody after they died from their physical body and before they leave for the astral body. And that might happen in the next 20 years, maybe 30. It may be possible to do something like that. Tell me, that isn't going to change everything. Right? Is that guy going to have a big change? I think so. I could be wrong. Maybe it won't change people. Or maybe we won't actually discover it if we go really dark and we just blow ourselves up or something. Okay, what other thing is emerging, or not even yet emerging, but it's going to be in the future, because I'm on a future kick right now. I don't have that much time left. That's a biggie, right? That's definitely a biggie. But the next thing is contact with members of the next kingdom. They have been pretty much in non-communication with us since the late 1920s. And that's going to change a lot, because we're moving into a more spiritual time. I know it's hard to believe that as we move closer to 2025. So it's entirely likely that a world service group, one or more, will be successful enough to have direct contact with members of the next kingdom. Individuals do right now, but I'm talking about a whole group of people might. And eventually, the members of the next kingdom will choose to have contact with general parts of humanity. There's a reason why they can't right now, and I'll explain it in this way. Right now, there's such a challenge from evil on Earth that if the next kingdom has direct contact with us, it opens this door wider to allow evil to come from other worlds. If we don't need an interplanetary fight going on right now, we've got enough problems just on the planet itself. So to keep that from happening, they don't have the contact that they might have had hundreds of years ago with more people. And that has caused people to lose faith. Faith has been turned away. The sixth ray has not been in focus, which also has damaged faith to some extent. Not since 1875. But the bigger thing is that one of the things that has happened in times when the spiritual hierarchy beings, either from Earth or from other worlds, had general contact with humans, there was a lot stronger faith in God and in us living beyond the shallowness of a physical life. People changed their attitudes when they realized who they really are, which is soul, who are eventually immortal. And so their whole perspective of humanity changes when, say, a third, at least, of humanity is having contact with beings that are super beings who used to be human beings, who have advanced themselves. Because that's a real, really different perspective, just as my perspective may be different from some people who listen to the show and don't necessarily believe what I tell them. But you see, this is a big deal. Now, what's the chance of it happening? It's all based on how much evil there is. You can see from what I just explained that if things go really much darker in the world, we're not going to be able to have contact with the next kingdom. And that really will adversely affect, it's sort of a snowball thing. We could go darker and darker because of that. So it's not a great thing to have that going on. Okay. So that's another issue or aspect. What about the technology factor? Could we build devices that would allow us to have communication? Well, we could build them, but the other side has to be willing to use them to communicate with us, right? But we can build devices to certainly sense the astral world and the etheric parts of our world much better. And if you had some old fluoroscopes, you take a couple of those and you make some certain changes, you might actually be able to, by shifting the phases of the fluoroscopes, it's a little weird. I don't know how much I should talk about this. You might be actually able to reveal the four different etheric subplanes. It might be dangerous doing that. There's radiation involved. But nonetheless, and there's other ways to do this. Wilhelm Reich, and before that, some pretty wild but well-known esoteric writers and teachers also knew about and had some ways of having contact with the etheric subworld. Really interesting stuff. Amazing. Amazing stuff. Really. And you know, it's interesting that there was so much better known about this 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, than there is today. So the esoteric truths have really gotten to the background, waiting for emerging discoveries in concrete knowledge. Why? Because humans need more balance in their concrete knowledge with the esoteric truths to drive evil out of their world. Right now, too much of our concrete knowledge is not used to that esoteric truths, and that's the wrong direction we've gone in, which has led to wars and evil and destruction. Power becomes a big issue. Major. And so we live in a world where people seek power. Power is really just a means of controlling others for the edification, gratification of the one doing and using the power. Certainly part of the darkness that surrounds us. What other discoveries are deeper into the future? Well, I predicted this, and it's going to be coming fairly soon. The ability to communicate with our pets and animals. Kind of going in another direction now, from superhumans to our animals. The ability to communicate with animals is only about 10 years away. Again, it will come from more advancements in some of the etheric sciences. But we will be able to gradually, starting 10 years from now, develop devices that will communicate with our pets. Now, what does that mean? It means that we will start respecting the consciousness of beings that aren't human, and we don't, right now we think of them as property, and it will make us more human. We will become more conscious, more loving, by respecting these animals, since they have this level of consciousness. You say, well, I feel that way about my dog or cat, but you really don't communicate. And they're communicating very, very Atlantean, sort of, it's mostly through their creative imagination. They have pictures in their mind, and they think of those pictures from one thing to another in their thought processes. They don't have very good conceptual ability, but we could develop a better conceptual ability if we could communicate better with them, and that is coming. What will that communication sound like and look like? We'll see the pictures they see on a computer screen. We'll get in our own minds a direct picture over time. This is sometimes beyond the computer screen thing of what they're thinking in terms of their imagination. We'll be able to see what thoughts they have in imagination. And maybe way into the future, we might be able to telepathically tell what their thoughts are. But when that takes place, also be starting to have telepathic devices between us and others that are humans. Now, how far is that? That's also needing the etheric element. So we're going to have to beat that system and understand the phase issues. Once we get that down, we'll be able to directly communicate with people through mental telepathy instead of cell phones. So the new cell phone will be a device that augments our ability to use electromagnetic energy directly and will be able to enter into, with their permission, the minds of others. Now you might say, well, what's going to prevent someone from reading your mind? You know? Well, you see, it works with energy following thought, and if someone's thought is, I don't want anybody reading my thought, it'll be pretty darn hard to do it. It won't work in terms of the quantum constant changes. It won't work for you. So you can only do it with someone who's willing to allow you to do it. What about the truth and law? Wow, that's going to be a big change. We're within about 20, 30 years of being able to completely determine when someone is telling the truth or not telling the truth. I know about functional MRIs, et cetera. That's really not going to solve the problem right now in courts. It's an interesting experiment, et cetera. What I'm talking about is more about the etheric realm, again, and this ability to read people's minds. And we'll have a jury that will be able to read a person's mind, know whether they're telling the truth or not, provided the person cooperates. And if a person doesn't cooperate, they'll just be assumed to be guilty. So that's kind of the way the law is going to change to this other realm, that truth is going to be fully seen. I'm going to tell you something. Politics, as we know it today, is going to radically change. Because as you probably know, most politicians are pathological liars. The higher the level of the politician, usually the greater the pathology. So that will stop, and that will create more truth in so many ways that will be helpful. There'll be truth between people who are sexual partners. There'll be truth between people and their children. A lot of things are going to change through the etheric realm of development. All within the next 30 years or so, some of this will start happening. And certainly within 50 years, we'll have the technology well developed, unless evil takes over. If evil takes over, it will try to use it to control people. And instead of us getting to truth, which is the virtue of the mental world, the mental world would be completely calm and monastically controlled by those who want to control our minds instead of wanting to get to the truth of something by us knowing what they're thinking. They're going to try to inject thought into us. That's the danger of reversing this process. And let me tell you, that's the end of Earth if it gets to that level. I don't want to start with this. That's a terrible thing to end on. I should have not saved it for the end. But anyway, there are many great things that we're going to discover that will lead to positive more than negative results. So don't think that I'm predicting the doom and gloom, which sometimes say. I'm saying there's a lot of potential here in future emerging discoveries that will really bring esoteric truths in. The esoteric truths will eventually become fully developed, complete truths, whole truths leading into the future, including the truth of the mental body itself and the truth of God and the truth of law and the truth of everything that today we hanker for and seek. That's what we're ending up towards. And I could have, believe me, tonight could have been for sure another two-hour show. There's no question about it. I skipped over a heck of a lot. I hope I gave you enough so you got a feel for the whole thing. But listen, we're out of time for right now. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.